And the date is Wednesday, April 29th, 2020. It's 2:31 in the afternoon. This is a remote hearing of the Labor Committee. I'm calling this meeting to order, and I'll ask for approval of the minutes of the previous meeting. Mr. Nelson, Representative Nelson.
I'll move the minutes from the previous meeting. I don't know what the date is, but yeah, I'll move the minutes.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Nelson. All in favor, say aye.
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 Any opposed? Corrections? Thank you. We have minutes of the previous meeting. We've got three bills on the agenda today. House File 4206, that's the chair's bill. We have a Senate file coming over, 3358. Representative Tabke's carrying that with one amendment. House File 4244, Representative Detmer has a bill with a few testifiers there as well. So I can pass the virtual gavel over to Chair Cagle, and I will present my bill.
Thank you. So, Representative Sundin, would you like to refer your bill, House File 4206, to the General Register?
That would be my motion today.
All right. Go ahead and proceed with your testimony.
Okay. This is a typical housekeeping bill. All the provisions of this bill have been agreed to in a bipartisan fashion, and I understand we have Commissioner Nancy Lepink from the Minnesota Department of Labor and Industry to have some comments on this bill.
Ms. Lepink? There you go.
Oh, thank you so much. So this is Nancy Lepink, and I'm the Commissioner of the Minnesota Department of Labor and Industry. I'm pleased to be here remotely today to testify in support of House File 4206, which is the 2020 recommendations of the Workers' Compensation Advisory Council. Thank you, Representative Sundin, for serving as the legislative liaison to the council, along with Representative Albright, and for carrying this legislation. As members of this committee may know, the Workers' Compensation Advisory Council is comprised of equal members of representatives from business and labor, and no legislation is recommended by the council unless a majority of business members and a majority of labor members agree to the legislation and decide and vote to recommend it. The bill before you today received unanimous support from the members of the advisory council. So the bill, Representative Sundin is correct. There are housekeeping provisions to it. There are also provisions in it, similar to the bill that the council recommended last year, addressing the department's work to stand up a new IT system for handling workers' compensation claims. And so, consequently, as that work has progressed, we have needed to evolve the statute to move from paper, a presumption of a paper-driven system, to one that will now be a data-driven or digitally driven system. And there are various things that there are also a few substantive provisions. So one of the provisions in the bill was recommended by the Department of Commerce. They have proposed amendments related to financial requirements for self-insured employers and group insurers. There is also a provision related to occupational disease presumptions. This was a proposal to clarify that the reference in the occupational disease presumptions to correctional officers was not limited to state correctional officers, but all correctional officers, and further also security counselors that work in our secure facilities. So this means that it would be correctional officers and security counselors that are employed by cities, counties, and the state. And it would make clear that they would be able to take advantage of certain presumptions related to occupational diseases and also related to PTSD. It should be noted that this change was actually included in the language that was recently enacted by the legislature that provided for a presumption related to the COVID-19 pandemic. So that language has already been made to be consistent with this this proposal would be made to be consistent with that recently enacted legislation. There's also provision related to vocational rehabilitation that adds supervision requirements for qualified rehabilitation consultant interns. There's a provision that allows insurers to pay the estate of a deceased or injured worker using an affidavit process that's already in law, but would now apply it to this, where upon receipt of a compliant affidavit of collection of personal property, the insurer would be able to pay out the benefit that they're obligated to pay under law if a worker is killed on the job. This will mean that families will not need to basically engage a representative to obtain this payment. They can simply go through this affidavit process. There's also the bill limits reimbursements to an insurer for medication provided to an injured worker covered by the second injury fund to the workers' compensation pharmacy fee scheduled amount, and does not allow the special compensation fund to reimburse administrative costs that may be included in a notice of payment. The bill clarifies what insurance policy data is reported to the Department of Labor and Industry by its contractor is public, and how it may be requested for reinsurance verification purposes. So the department engages with the MWCIA to related to certain data that's collected on the workers' compensation system. That data is then provided and reported to the department, and this limits what use that data can be put to and how it is made public. Clarifies the requirements for the department's annual prompt first action report. There's further requirements related to or provisions that relate to how filing of electronic reports of injury will be done in the campus, which is the new IT system environment. It also provides for clarifies who has access to the campus division file and under what circumstances, and requires, and this was a request of this request made during last session, that it requires campus to generate an audit trail when the division file is accessed. Specifies who must create a campus account, and requires those persons to authenticate their identity and agree to terms safeguarding data security and privacy of data in the campus system. And lastly, it identifies obligations of senders, recipients, and agencies when a party to a claim electronically files a document in the wrong file or sends a document to the wrong person, and provides that the agency whose electronic system is used is not responsible for that potential data breach under the Minnesota Data Practices Act. So really, in simple terms, this means that if by mistake a party, includes a document that in a filing that it shouldn't have included, that simply because it's using this new campus system, that's not technically a data breach by the department. And therefore it would be not addressed as it's provided for in under the Minnesota Data Practices Act. So that is the bill that is before you, and I welcome any questions that people may have. You also have the summary, a summary of the bill that was, I believe, distributed to the committee members.
Thank you, Commissioner. Are there any member questions? I can't see the raise hand function, so Molinar, you'll have to let me know. No? Chair Sundin, would you like to renew your, or is there any other testifiers on this bill? No? Chair Sundin, would you like to renew your motion?
Madam Chair.
Oh, go ahead, Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to on record that the bill that we're seeing today from Chair Sundin is the bill that's approved by the full work comp advisory council.
Chair Sundin, you're on mute.
Okay. Thank you very much, Representative Fabian. That's this bill does represent quite a little bit of consternation and concern with the council members, and it's a good product. And I thank the commissioner for weighing in and explaining the bill in further detail. So I will renew my motion to refer this 4206 to the general.
All right, and then we need a roll call on that, I'm assuming?
Yeah.
All right, so the clerk will take the roll.
All right. Chair Sundin.
Aye.
Representative Cagle.
Aye.
Representative Vogel.
Aye.
Representative Brand.
Aye.
Representative Claflin.
Aye.
Representative Detmer.
Aye.
Representative Eklund.
Aye.
Representative Fabian.
Aye.
Representative Hornstein.
Aye.
Representative Lippert.
Aye.
Representative Mecklen.
Aye.
Representative Nelson Michael.
Aye.
Representative Nelson Nathan.
Aye.
Representative Purcell. Representative Purcell. Representative Zhang.
Aye.
Okay. That's 15 ayes, 0 nays.
Representative Sundin, did we take the roll at the beginning? You're on mute.
No, we did not. I'm sorry. We can back that up and take the roll. Will the clerk take the roll?
All right. In attendance, Chair Sundin.
Here.
Vice Chair Cagle.
Here.
Representative Vogel.
Here.
Representative Brand.
I'm here.
Representative Claflin.
Here.
Representative Detmer.
Here.
Representative Eklund.
Here.
Representative Fabian.
Present.
Representative Hornstein.
Here.
Representative Lippert.
Here.
Representative Mecklund.
Here.
Representative Nelson Michael.
Here.
Representative Nelson Nathan.
Here.
Representative Purcell. I think that's the president. Representative Zhang Jay.
I'm here.
All right. Everyone is in attendance.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Next up, we have a Senate file coming over. Representative Tabke will be presenting minimum age provided for a safe amusement ride operation. And I will move Senate file 3558, and so it's referred to the general register. So Representative Tabke, to your bill.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. And just for clarification, I think you said 3558, and it's 3358.
Okay, I'll adjust my glasses. Thank you. Go ahead with your bill. Yes.
All right. Thank you very much, Mr. Chair and members. It is good to see everyone who I'm not on committees with It's always great to be here with you in front of labor today. And it's my first time in front of labor, but I couldn't do virtual treats, so sorry about that. And but today we have a bill that is for a constituent of mine in Ballyfair, which is here in Shakopee, but also for amusement parks across the state of Minnesota. And so what this bill does is it allows amusement park workers under the age of 18, so 16 and 17 year olds, to be able to operate rides at amusement parks in Minnesota. And so this would affect a variety of They would affect a variety of different amusement parks from Valley Fair, Paul Bunyan Land, and Como Town and Mall of America. And as a result of the COVID pandemic, this has become a much bigger issue than it was before, because a lot of the J-1 visas, the folks that come in from other countries to work and do these jobs are not able to come to the United States this year to do this work if and when these amusement parks are able to open up. And so it has exacerbated the existing economic stress on our amusement parks. And so Valley Fair alone hires approximately 420 J-1 students each year. And so those won't be able to be here and will need to have the opportunity to backfill and hire 16 and 17 year olds from my community to be able to basically push the button to make the roller coasters go and run those rides. And so we have a variety of testifiers here today to talk about this bill. This is one that has, as the chair said, passed the Senate already. It passed in a very bipartisan fashion. There are only two no votes through the entire Senate. And we have a lot of bipartisan folks supporting this on the House side as well. So, Mr. Chair, I will leave it at that for now and go to testifiers if you'd like.
Thank you, Representative Tabke. First up, we have Commissioner Nancy Lepink from the Department of Labor and Industry. Commissioner Lepink, please.
So thank you again, Chair. Appreciate the opportunity to testify today in support of Senate File 3355. I would like to thank Representative Tabke for working with the department on this legislation. The bill before you today represents the work of engagement with stakeholders that has included Valley Fair and Paul Bunyan Land and their international association to find a compromise to allow 16 and 17 year olds to safely operate amusement rides. So under current Minnesota child labor laws, certain occupations have been determined to be hazardous for the employment of minors, and by rule, operating amusement rides was one of those hazardous occupations. And to date, has prohibited employment of minors under the age of 18 to operate amusement rides. So, through engagement with Valley Fair and Paul Bunyan Land, it is clear that technology, equipment, and practices of these parks related to the operation of amusement parks has meant that it's now safer to operate these rides. But it's still important that youth have the necessary training and supervision before engaging in that work. So the bill today includes various requirements for, particularly related to the training and supervision of 16 and 17 year olds who would now be able to operate amusement rides, and updates requirements related to that training requirements. The bill also includes updates related to daily inspections of rides to ensure that they're safe, actually both for operators and for riders before they begin operations. So as a result of the engagement with stakeholders, actually many of the requirements in the bill were actually suggested by these stakeholders as being important to ensuring the safety and health of youth, and therefore allowing for this change in the longstanding child labor laws of the state. So therefore the department is pleased that we were able to reach a good consensus and a good bill. And the department supports it. And I'm happy if after the testimony or now there's any questions, I'd be happy to respond.
Okay, thank you. Any questions for the commissioner on this bill? Okay, thanks for your input on this, Commissioner.
Thank you, my pleasure, okay. Representative.
Next we have Melissa Lutz, HR Director for Valley Fair online.
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Chair Sundin, for allowing us to be here today. Again, my name is Melissa Lutz. I'm the HR Director at Valley Fair, and I'll be speaking on the park's behalf today. The federal age for ride operators is 16 years old, and close to 40 states have enacted that requirement. Back in 1991, when the Minnesota law was enacted, it may have made perfect sense to require a ride operator to be 18 years of age. Most rides at that time were manually operated, with gears and switches to start, stop, speed up, and slow down the ride, but those days are gone. All rides at the park are now fully automated, including the legacy rides like Tilter, Scrambler, and High Roller. The job of the ride operator today is fairly simple. They're responsible for loading and unloading guests onto the ride, making sure that required restraints are in place, and pushing a button, maybe two, to start and stop the ride. In fact, the job of the ride operator is much less complex than driving a car, which 16 and 17-year-olds are able to do in the state of Minnesota. For four seasons, from 2015 through 2018, 16 and 17-year-olds were allowed to work in rides at the park through a variance with the Department of Labor. And we had a great track record. But in 2019, the Labor Department denied our request for further variances. But since that time, we have been actively working to partner with the department to address their concerns around safety and supervision. Through that partnership, we have developed the language you see before you today. And we feel very comfortable that this new law aligns with our already rigorous safety protocols and ensures improved safety for ride operators across the state of Minnesota. Lastly, as Representative Tapke talked about, the labor market for these jobs is tight. In addition to our domestic staff, we depend on bringing in over 420 international students through the J-1 visa program each year to staff the park. With concerns around coronavirus, we've already seen the visa program taken away from our Chinese students, and we're experiencing significant delays in arrival dates across many countries. It's imperative that we are able to employ 16 and 17-year-olds as ride operators in order to prevent ride closures and provide our guests with the experience that they expect and that they paid for. We thank everyone for your time today. In closing, Valley Fair requests that the committee vote favorably on this bill. I hope that I've provided you with some information that will be helpful for you as you make your decision, and we'd be happy to answer any questions that you have. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Melissa Lutz. Would there be any questions for Melissa Lutz from Valley Fair at this point from the committee? Or anyone else? I do have one.
Yes.
Given the COVID-19 situation that we're dealing with here, you know, everyone is preparing for a resumption of normal activity throughout the state. We don't know when that's going to be. People are hopeful about that, but I'm just wondering what type of procedures are you looking at to safeguard your customers at that park in the coming years?
Yeah, you know, we are 100% focused on that right now. You may or may not know, but we are a brand of 13 parks across the country. We've got a number of, professionals across the organization working on this. We've got procedures and protocols that we're talking about now and putting in place. We will have a rigorous plan to make sure that our employees and guests are safe, and we do not intend on opening to the public until we're able to offer a safe environment for those guests and our employees.
Thank you very much.
You're You're welcome.
My understanding is Representative Hornstein, Chair Hornstein, has a question.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Ms. Lutz. Thank you for your testimony. Do you have in place or are considering a kind of system where perhaps some of the more complicated rides are not eligible for this age group? I imagine some rides are easier to operate than others. And so do you have that kind of differentiation as part of the policy?
You know, I am not the ride expert, but I have a couple people on the line here that could answer that question. And so maybe Jessica Naderman, who's our director of operations, if she might be able to address that, I think she'd be able to answer the question.
Yeah, it's interesting because when we looked
please
at
the identify yourself for the tape and then proceed, please.
Yes, I am Jessica Naderman. I'm the director of operations at Valley Fair. When we looked at this policy across all the rides and the different types of rides, most of our associates were already working roller coasters with their approval. The way we interpreted the variance was that they had to be under direct supervision, as well as were not permitted to push any buttons. So they were only given a variance to assist with loading and unloading. And in those few years that we did that, we had an incredible safety record. Where those children were able to work very safely in that environment. So this now allows us to let them operate the kiddie rides as well, which are very simple, much more simplistic than a roller coaster. But since they've already had that experience working safely for years, we determined that those should be included as well.
Okay. Any follow-up on that, Representative?
No, thank you, Mr. Chair. That was helpful.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions to either one of these testifiers? Okay, next up we have Matt Killian, president of the Brainerd Lakes Chamber of Commerce. Mr. Killian, please.
Well, hello everyone, Mr. Chair and members. Thank you for having me here. It's fun to see our legislation get done this way. And it's great not to leave the Brainerd Lakes area whenever possible. Thanks for the opportunity to testify in support of this bill and in support of our friends at Paul Bunyan Land. I'm the president of the Brainerd Lakes Chamber. We have more than 1,000 members of our chamber, which makes us one of the larger chambers in the state of Minnesota. And I think it goes without saying that our economy in the Brainerd Lakes area really depends on tourism. People are drawn up here for the lakes and the natural resources, but also because of these shopping, dining experiences and these legacy attractions like Paul Bunyan Land. And this business has been part of the experience in the Brainerd Lakes area since 1950. And throughout that time, it's been part of the Minnesota experience for generations of families. One of the aspects of the story that you may not know is that we almost lost the business in 2003 due to the high cost of operations. And I believe that the brother and sister team of Alan Rademacher, and Lois Moon are going to be testifying in a few minutes. But they poured their blood, sweat, and tears and financial resources in order to save Paul Bunyan Land and the Paul Bunyan statue and all the kiddie rides from going to South Dakota. So we're always going to be eternally grateful for them for doing that. Of course, the centerpiece is the big 26-foot talking Paul Bunyan that knows your name. And that's been a big part of growing up in Minnesota for generations. But they also have a number of kiddie rides that they've operated safely for decades. And these have been the 16 and 17-year-old kids that have operated these rides. So I can tell you, and if you allow me to serve as a character witness, so to speak, for Alan and Lois and lots of other attractions throughout the state, these rides have been regularly maintained. They've been inspected. They have a training program. A lot of times they even have parental consent, and adult supervision is always part of it as well. And last year, due to whatever circumstances, they weren't able to hire about a third of their workers, those 16 and 17-year-old workers, which put the entire operation in jeopardy. And we'd hate to see that happen again. And of course, this is long-term focused. We're not just talking about the COVID era, thank goodness. We have 25% unemployment up here, unfortunately. But in a typical summer season, it's really hard to find workers. And Representative Tabke mentioned the seasonal workers. our big resorts employ those 2,2500 J1s. There's another program called H2B. We're not going to have that. So these youth workers are really important. So I just want to double underline the fact that we can't operate without this. I know that Paul Bunyan Land and many others are more than willing to implement all measures in the bill. And I would just strongly encourage you to pass it because we just can't lose these attractions either in the Brainerd Lakes area or across the state. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Killian. Does anybody have a question or comments on for Mr. Killian?
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
I was just curious. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was curious, does Valley Fair expect to open this year at all?
Let's ask Representative Tabke.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair and Representative Zhang, for that question. Is that yes, we are hoping and working for that to happen yet this year to make sure that we can employ and keep the entertainment that we've got going on down here in Shakopee as vibrant and great as it possibly can be. And so we are absolutely heading in that direction. Obviously, anything can change, and we are working on that as it goes forward and only open when it is safe to do that. And so hopefully it is, and this bill is in place to make sure that they have the labor that they need in order to function successfully and safely.
One more question, Mr. Chair.
Go ahead, Representative Zhang.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Tacky, is the wild thing still at the Valley Fair too?
Representative Tacky?
Representative Zhang, thank you, Mr. Chair. You obviously need to come to Shakopee more often, my friend. Yes, the Wild Thing is still up and running, along with many other great attractions at Valley Fair and throughout Shakopee.
Okay. Thank you, Representatives, and thank you, Mr. Killian. Next up, we have Lois Smuda and then Alan Redenmacher, owners of the Paul Bunyan Land. Go ahead.
Hi, thanks for listening to us today. My brother and I, Alan Rademacher, we have owned Paul Bunyan Land since 2003. Paul Bunyan Land has been in the Brainerd Lakes area for 7 years now. We have owned the park since 2003, opened up in 2004, and we are keeping the tradition of Paul Bunyan, greeting each child by name as they enter the park. And that is truly a magical experience that lasts for a lifetime. Our park is family owned, and we take a lot of pride in the family-friendly atmosphere. We offer a clean and safe environment for our customers and employees. There are 19 amusement rides that are permanent stationary fixtures. The rides meet or exceed safety standards. All of the rides are inspected daily by trained supervisors, and maintenance is on the premises during open hours. There is an initial training procedure done by a trained supervisor with ongoing follow-ups for each ride operator. An adult supervisor is available for any type of assistance that is needed. A 16 to 17-year employee is attracted to our business because of the fun atmosphere and the hours. The park is open daily from 10 to 6 p.m. Memorial Weekend through Labor Day. We offer the opportunity for an employee to learn to be respectful and courteous to other employees and customers. In the past, 16 and 17-year-olds have been a great asset to our business. They are ready to meet the expectations of the job with the proper training. It is a learning experience about being on time, following directions, having respect for authority, and being a good team player. They have proven to be reliable and excited to be part of our workforce. Hiring 16 and 17-year-olds without a required exemption permit would definitely benefit us. This age group is fully capable of operating our rides. Many of them drive vehicles to work and then operate our rides. We have been proven that they can do this because they have done it successfully for 15 years. Thank you for listening.
Okay, thank you very much. Is Alan Redenmacher available for comments?
Yes, he is.
Yeah, this is Alan Rademacher, the half owner. owner of Paul Bunyan Land. And like Matt says, we kept the thing in the area, expecting, you know, kids to be able to come out and work for us. Not so much that kids working for us, but the history of the Brainerd Lakes area really needs Paul Bunyan Land here. Of course, the COVID-19 is really going to raise heck with us this year, but we're really looking forward to opening up. And we actually help these 16 and 17-year-old kids be able to go out into the real world and actually work in jobs that they're needed. We have a lot of fleet farms, other places up here. I can't think of any right offhand, but actually, as soon as they come and work for us, we don't even get a phone call anymore of stating where, you know, how good are these kids or where are these kids from. Or as soon as they find out that they're from Paul Bunyan Land, they actually can go on. They actually can go out into the world here and find a job anywhere. They know that they've been through training. They know that they've had the right, you know, protocol for them to be able to do that. By not letting the 15, 16, 17-year-old kids work for us, that kind of stops that whole realm of kids up here from actually learning the job, the places to go. So I'm just hoping that you guys will help us pass this bill to be able to have those 16, 17-year-old kids to be able to help them out in the real world. Thank you for listening.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Redenbacher. Any questions for these testifiers? Okay, we're going to back up just for a second. I understand Representative Detmer has a question.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess this is kind of a tongue-in-cheek type. I went to Bemidji State University, and could you, anybody tell me why Paul Bunyan and Babe the Blue Ox and Bemidji can't talk back to you? I've stood at their feet many times trying to talk to them. But you go to Brainerd, hey, they talk to you all the time. Just talking to you.
The college years.
It must be.
Okay. Thank you very much. Let me see. We have an amendment. I understand Representative Mecklen has an A1 amendment. Would you like to present your amendment, Representative Mecklen?
I would. Thank you, Representative Sedin, and I believe the chair currently is Representative Cagle. I would like to bring forward the A1 amendment to include the 16 and 17-year-old group to be able to operate lawnmowers. And I think everything we just heard kind of goes to the same point, that these newer lawnmowers and the commercial lawnmowers are very, very safe at this point in time. I actually currently own a John Deere 997. And prior to that, I had a John Deere 1600. These things have more safety options and fail safes on them to make sure you can't really hurt yourself. I've been in some pretty precarious situations in my own yard, and they are pretty much bulletproof to make sure that, you know, you can't roll them over, hardly. And I think these everything we just heard kind of goes to the same exact thing, and I'm sure the folks up at Paul Bunyan Land would like to be able to hire a 16 or a 17-year-old to help out with their yard lawn maintenance as well. So there's some kind of misleading, or I shouldn't say misleading, but like gray areas within the language of what the heck is it here? In this current statutes where it does exempt, you know, under 16 from using push snowblowers, but it doesn't actually say that the 16 and 17-year-olds can't use a riding lawnmower and other things that are included in this amendment. And I hope you will all take this as a favorable amendment at this point in time, and I'd like to have some more conversation. So if one of my colleagues would like to jump in, I would certainly appreciate it.
Thank you, Representative Mecklen. I understand we have a Forrest, help me with this, sir, from the Minnesota Nursery and Landscape Association.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, I want to testify in support of the A1 amendment today. During the COVID-19 crisis, the outdoor industry, members of the Minnesota Nursery and Landscape Association continue to operate in a safe and responsible manner. and have positioned themselves to be a good employer of many Minnesotans. And I think that can include 16 and 17 year olds, especially in areas of lawn care and landscaping and the operation of these push mowers. I think exposing young people to landscaping and horticulture and lawn care early is very important and can help inspire them to pursue fulfilling and lifelong careers in outdoor industries, and sparking that interest early on is very important. Of course, safety is key. As Representative Mecklen mentioned, a lot of these devices are very technologically advanced and have a lot of safety features. However, it's very it's imperative that my members, who would hopefully be able to employ these 16 and 17 year olds, would provide the appropriate training and supervision to ensure that the operation of these lawnmowers, both the push lawnmowers or riding lawnmowers, would be done in a safe and appropriate way. One distinction this was addressed in the Senate is what exactly these lawnmowers would look like. I don't think this language is currently in the amendment, but it would be with the American National Standards Institute, or the Outdoor Power Equipment Institute. They have standards for what a commercial, or rather a residential or normal riding lawnmower would look like, and would not include some of the larger ditch mowers or sulky type units or flail mowers or sickle bar mowers, rather just a riding lawnmower and a push lawnmower to do those types of jobs, whether it's on a golf course or a lawn or an apartment building or other types of spots like that. Currently, the federal rules do not prohibit 16 and 17 year olds from mowing, so this would align with the federal standards, as well as the American Academy of Pediatrics recommends that a minimum age of 12 actually for push mowers and 16 for riding mowers. So this does align with the American Academy of Pediatrics recommendations. I do know there's been a lot of work going on between different stakeholders, the Department of Labor and Industry, to find adequate compromise language. And I think that what comes out of that will produce a result that will allow a lot of my members to employ 16 and 17 year olds in, you know, in this new world that we're operating in, while doing so safely and on locations that are adequate for these young people to operate the mowers. So I'm happy to take any questions, and I want to thank everyone for working together to find an outcome that works for everyone. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Sir. Is any questions for this testifier? Did Representative Fabian have a question?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Not so much a question as a comment. I appreciate the opportunity to talk about the A1 amendment, and I appreciate the work that's going on with the Senate and so forth with the commissioner and her staff to try to reach some sort of a compromise on this. And as Representative Mecklen said in his opening comments, this is something that that's really important to a lot of people to try to get this done. I want to remind the committee that this was passed out of our committee last year and sent to government operations. The bill itself, which is House File 790, has bipartisan authors on it. Representative Tabke, when he introduced the bill that we're amending, he talked about a constituent of his in Valley Fair. And I can tell you that there are constituents of ours all across the state that would like to see changes made in the rules and the laws regarded to 16 and 17 year olds operating riding lawnmowers. The safety improvements that have been made with seat belts and roll bars and mulching type mowers or rear discharge mowers instead of side discharge, automatic shutoffs. There's all kinds of safety equipment that's been built into these things. When you live where I live in northern Minnesota in farm country, we have 14-year-olds that are going to be going to work in the next couple of days driving 500 horsepower tractors, but we can't go to the local golf course or the airport or the city park and mow. It's really confusing to a lot of people. And the reason that I started on this a number of years ago was because the cities and the counties were going through the process of applying for a waiver, and they were being granted in most cases, but we just wanted to put this into statute so that the rules would actually sync up. And as Mr. Sear, I think, mentioned the age requirements,
When I got started doing this a few years ago, the 15 and 16-year-olds were expressly prohibited from mowers, but those under 18, so the 16 and 17-year-olds, were prohibited from using a lot of different equipment, but not riding lawnmowers. So what I'm trying to do, we have been trying to do, is to get this issue moved forward. I hope that we can continue to work in a bipartisan way to get this done. I would like to ask Commissioner Lippert if she would answer a question, Mr. Chair.
That's terrific with me. Commissioner Lepik, would you entertain a question from Representative Fabian, please?
Certainly.
Go ahead, Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner, thank you very much. Can you give us, the committee, kind of an update on what progress we might be making in terms of being able to come to some sort of a compromise on this as we move forward?
Certainly, Mr. Chair, Representative Fabian. So the department has been working with Senator Hall on amendments and to his legislation, Senate File 1805. It is my belief that we've reached an understanding on some additional language that was sought by the department. I provided that language to you, Representative, and to Representative Franson, and also to the Chair and Sundin and Representative Vogel last evening when we learned that this amendment would be before the committee today. I believe that as we did with the amusement park language, that as we look to allow for 16 and 17-year-olds to begin to engage in some of these activities, in part because of the safety, increased safety of this equipment, that we sort of build around that a few things related to training and ensuring that that equipment actually has the safety features operational and usable by the youth. And so the department has added a few additional requirements or requests to the language that was originally introduced by Senator Hall. And like I said, in the conversation I had with him on the phone, we reached an agreement, I believe, and we have been working then with the Senate on language that it incorporates that understanding.
Thank you, Commissioner. Any follow-up on that? Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, I appreciate that. And Commissioner Pitsky, thank you very much. I appreciate your work on this, I really do. Because of the timelines that we have, obviously, it was hard to take your language and make it into an amendment. And quite frankly, what I want to do is continue working on this. I don't want to sabotage Representative Tabke's bill or whatever. So I would also hope that, and I don't remember in your testimony, did you say that you sent the language to Representative Franson as well in the House? Because she's actually the author of this bill.
Yes. Chair Sundin, Representative Fabian, yes, we provided the language that we have discussed with Senator Hall to Representative Franson.
Thank you, Commissioner. Thank you, Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate your indulgence, and I'll turn it back to you, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Fabian. We have a Brady Scott that would like to have a word on this, on the E1. Is there Brady Scott? You want to identify yourself?
Yes, that is me. Can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead.
All right. My name is Brady Scott, and I am currently the golf course superintendent at Minnewaska Golf Club in Glenwood, Minnesota, just 15 minutes south of Alexandria. And before I was here, I was at Baker National Golf Course. That is a public golf course in Medina, Minnesota. I was there for 12 years. And then prior to that, I was at Minnesota Valley Country Club for 6 years. And that's in Bloomington, Minnesota. That's a private golf course. So the reason I bring this up, I'm going to touch on this 16 and 17-year-olds operating equipment from the management standpoint. And the reason I bring up these courses I was at, they're all unique in their own ways, private, semi-private, and public. But they all deal with this 16 and 17 year olds operating equipment. To me, the sooner in age, the earlier in age we can get these 16 and 17 year olds working out in the outdoors, maybe working with their hands, exposing them to tasks, skills that they wouldn't normally be exposed to, and then train them in on the safe way to operate things, the safe way to wear safety equipment, when to wear safety equipment, such as gloves, eye protection, hearing protection, those sorts of things. And what I've found is the sooner we get these kids to work, train them in on the proper way to operate, proper way to wear protective equipment, the better they will be in the long run, whether it's for me as their manager or for the community moving forward in their life. So to get these kids when they're 16 years old, putting them on a machine with an engine on it, you can show them how to check the oil, how to choke it to get it started without flooding it. There's these newer pieces of equipment have numerous safety mechanisms on them to make them safe. But that being said, people can still be reckless and careless on these pieces of equipment, and it is up to me as the manager to not only rely on the piece of equipment to keep them safe, but train them in the right ways to keep them safe on their own, and to show them that even though the machine may go 10 miles an hour, we don't want you to go 10 miles an hour on it, on this dewy surface, on this hillside, over this cart path that has a bump on it. So there's numerous examples of exposing these kids to the safe way to operate these equipment, pieces of equipment that are already safe. So then they can carry this on with them when they're operating their own vehicle, or their own lawnmower at their house, without ruining it. Because yes, they're very expensive pieces of equipment. And if they operate it the wrong way, it could damage the property that they're maintaining, or ruin the piece of equipment and make it very expensive to get it fixed. So, I'm more coming from this from the standpoint of exposing these kids to the proper way to operate, the proper way to wear and when to wear their hearing protection, eye protection, gloves, maybe long pants when they're weed whipping. So when they do own their own house, that they know when they go out to weed whip, they will wear hearing protection, they will wear safety glasses, they will wear long pants, and they'll be a good example moving forward in the rest of their life. So I appreciate you listening to me, and it's an honor to speak in front of you, and thank you very much, and I'll answer any questions.
Thank you for your comments, Mr. Scott. I understand Representative Nelson has a question. I don't know which Nelson.
Nelson M.
Okay.
I guess the question I have is for Commissioner Lepig. Is this the language in this amendment that the Department of Labor has worked on, or because I haven't seen the other language that Representative Franson has in her bill. So are you okay with this language, or do you think this needs more work?
Chair Sadeed, Representative Nelson, it would be the preference of the department that this amendment not be added to this bill, and that we be allowed to complete the work with the Senate and Representative Franson to have the language that we're working on be the bill that comes before the committee.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Any further comments on the A1 amendment? Okay, we can take this to a vote.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Fabian, did you have comments?
I think that Representative Mecklen has a comment. Thank you.
Oh, okay, that's fine. Representative Mecklen.
Chair Sundin, thank you. So, and basically everything I've heard, I think we're all kind of on the same page. I'm very happy to hear that the commissioner is working with the Senate side on this thing. So with that, I will go ahead and pull this amendment and not offer it. But I do want to say, especially to those that are from the Valley Fair side, I think it was, I'm trying to think of the name of the roller coaster, but I actually did paint that thing, or was on the painting crew back, good Lord, 32 years ago. So very familiar with Valley Fair, and I hope this all works out for y'all, and I hope we can get this a lot more part of this thing through on the Senate side, and we'll address this at another time. So I will go ahead and pull the A1 amendment.
Thank you, Representative.
Backlund.
Backlund would drop the A1 amendment at this point. And Representative Tabke, would you like final word on this?
Yes, thank you very much, Mr. Chair and members. As you can hear from the testimony that we've had today, this is a carefully negotiated bill that has been a lot of work has been done on it. So I really appreciate the work of Commissioner Lepping and the Amusement Park Association for working so hard on this together and getting something that can be a very good bicameral, bipartisan solution and moving this forward. So I appreciate everyone's positive vote on this bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Tabke. I'm going to renew my motion that it's actually Senate File 3358. Be referred to the General Register. We'll take the roll.
All right, Chair Sundin.
Aye.
Vice Chair Cagle.
Aye.
Representative Vogel.
Aye.
Representative Brand. Brand votes aye. Representative Claflin.
Aye.
Representative Detmer.
Aye.
Representative Eklund.
Aye.
Representative Fabian.
Aye.
Representative Hornstein.
Aye.
Representative Lippert.
Aye.
Representative Mecklund.
Aye.
Representative Nelson Michael.
Aye.
Representative Nelson Nathan.
Aye.
Representative Purcell. Representative Purcell. Representative Zhang.
Aye.
14 ayes, 0 nays.
Okay, thank you. The motion passes. You're on your way. Next up, we have House File 4244. Representative Detmer, as a state building code concern, new buildings with pitched roofs exempted from requiring dedicated anchorages for window cleaning. Representative Detmer, it'll be your motion.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, yes, I move House File 4244 to be referred to the General Register.
I believe the motion would be refer the bill to Jobs and Economic Development. I understand they want to hear that.
Okay. Will do. Yes, Mr. Chair.
Go ahead.
Mr. Chair and members, relating to this state building code, exempting new buildings with pitch roofs for requiring dedicated anchors and windows, window cleaning. And it's in statutes 218, section 326 B, 1.106, subdivision 4. And this was brought to me by a constituent that Mr. Peter Stalin, and he'll be speaking shortly. He has a big building project in Blaine, in Anoka County, and his building has pitched roofs. And the current statute basically deals with flat roofs. So we felt that it was proper to put some language together to allow to eliminate these anchors, which would cost another $75,000 to put in that could never be used. So I had a meeting in my office with Mr. Stalin and also the Department of Labor, Scott McGowan, and we were able to put this language together. And so I bring it before the committee. So with that, I would like to introduce Peter Stalin, who brought it to my attention.
Thank you, Representative. Mr. Peter Stalin, would you identify yourself and proceed.
He's going to have to unmute himself.
Mr. Salen.
Now? Mr. Yes. Can you hear me now? Okay. Mr. Chair, Representative Dettmer, thank you for the opportunity here. I'm a real estate developer here in the Twin Cities, and last year I started construction of 138 market rate apartment project in Blaine. I was notified by the city building inspector there early on last fall that the anchor system for window cleaning was to be required on my building, which is five stories. It's four and five stories tall. And after discussing this with my architect and structural engineers, civil engineers, and so forth, we determined that this system would never be used because it's inapplicable to buildings, as Mr. Dettmer mentioned, with pitched roofs. You would see these types of window anchor systems on commercial buildings with flat roofs, because what happens is people, that the window washers go up through the top floor, they access it through the flat roofs, and then these window systems are anchors with slings or buckets. You've probably all seen them downtown Minneapolis, where they adjust themselves up and down the stories to clean the windows. And then when they're done, they bring themselves up to the top floor again, or their bottom down at the street level, and then the system retracts. But for buildings with pitched roofs, there's no way to access these. So the only way that window washers wash windows on buildings that have pitched roofs is to use a high lift, which is a mechanical system. You know, you've seen them where they sit in the bucket and they go up. So they never use these systems. So it's a complete waste of money. And the statute, the 326B106, I don't know why it was written this way, but apparently it was forgotten that or ignored that buildings with, you know, pitched roofs would utilize these. And according to my architect, there's many, many buildings over the years since this statute has been enacted that have been forced to do this, a complete waste of money. So that's why I brought this to the attention of Representative Dettmer, and he's been kind enough to help me, and the Labor and Industries Chief Building Inspector, Mr. McClellan, also indicated that this has been an issue. So I am under construction right now. We've actually got the roof on, and the building inspector in Blaine said that they really, their hands are tied. They simply can't resolve this issue until the statute is amended. So that's my request. I appreciate that. I'd be happy to answer any questions if you have it.
Hey, thank you. Thank you very much. We've got three more testifiers right now. So if we can hold our questions until the end on this one, that'd be terrific. Just stay tuned, please. We have Mr. Eric Krohn up next for some comments. Mr. Krohn? Mr. Krohn, do you have comments for the committee?
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, you want to identify yourself?
Yes. My name is Eric Krohn. I am a high-rise window cleaner in Minneapolis, Minnesota. I'm a member of SIU Local 26. I use these anchorages on many commercial buildings, as has been said before. Now, there are certain buildings, even in downtown, you could take Lowe's, for example, what used to be the Grave 601 Hotel. And that actually at the top has a pitched roof as well that they never did install anchors on, and it makes it impossible for us to maintain the windows on that building for a good stretch of it. There have been many residential buildings, as I can say, that do have pitched roofs, and you would use either ladders or lifts of sorts, but there can also be many situations in which that is not a possibility due to landscaping surrounding the building or stability of the parking lot and areas around it to handle lifts of that type. So, you know, I just I can't see going backwards in terms of safety just to save some money. And, that would pretty much sum up what I have to say on the subject.
Thank you, Mr. Crone. We also have Sarah Lopez Lara, political director for SEIU Local 26. Ms. Lopez, please.
Good afternoon. Can you hear me?
Go ahead.
Okay. Good afternoon, Chair Sunding and members of the Labor Committee. My name is Sarah Lopez, and I'm the political director of SEIU Local 26. We represent 8,000 property service workers in the Twin Cities. We represent Mr. Crone is one of our window washers, and he's one of the 60 window cleaners that we represent. And I'm here to testify on House File HF-4244. Thank you, Chairman Sunding, for the opportunity to speak. As you know, SEIU 26 opposes HF-4244, which modifies state building code for new buildings with pitched roofs, exempting them from requiring dedicated anchorages for window cleaning. Our members perform a dangerous job cleaning windows. Therefore, support points such as dedicated anchorage are very important to keep workers safe. Aside from window washers, dedicated anchorage also protects roofers and metal sheet layers, as pitched roofs in commercial buildings can cause workers to slide off and fall. And some windows are really hard to clean due to the lack of anchorage. Window washers and suspended access workers must be able to attach equipment safely while working at heights. And installing dedicated anchorage does not represent a significant expense for a new construction when we're talking about the protection of life. According to the Bureau of Labor Statistics, slips, trips, and falls are the leading cause of workplace fatalities and injuries in the construction industry today. Safe anchorage prevents workers from falling and building owners from serious liability. A few years ago, a window washer member of SEIU 26 lost his life due to inappropriate anchorage and support. So we ask you to vote no today for the safety of all workers performing their jobs, suspending from lifelines. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Next up, we have Melissa Heising from the Minnesota AFL-CIO. You identify yourself and go right ahead with your testimony.
Okay. Thank you. Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Melissa Heising, and I'm legislative director for the Minnesota AFL-CIO, the state's labor federation of more than 1,000 local unions who represent more than 300,000 working people throughout our state. Just yesterday, Governor Walz issued a proclamation declaring Workers' Memorial Day in Minnesota, and the labor movement held our annual observance of this day to remember those who have been injured or died on the job. The ceremony usually takes place at the Workers' Memorial Garden in front of the mosaic on the Capitol lawn, which you can see behind me in my Zoom background. But this year we held the event by video. Last night, attendees heard from workers on the front lines across the state, and it was more clear than ever that now is the time to renew the fight for safer jobs. And with the COVID-19 pandemic, that fight has taken on new urgency. We owe it to all working people in Minnesota right now to strengthen safety measures and protections, not weaken them. Several members of this committee were around in 2012 when the original legislation requiring dedicated anchorage for window cleaning on new buildings and renovations of buildings of four stories or greater was signed into law. If you remember, at that time, there had been three window cleaners who fell to their deaths in Minnesota within 2.5 years, which at the time was a higher mortality rate than the national mortality rate in that industry. The 2012 bill had bipartisan authorship and was passed almost unanimously in both the House and the Senate. I encourage you all to remember why this law was needed in the first place, why it is still needed, and respectfully request that you vote no on House File 4244. Thank you for your time.
Okay, thank you very much. We've got time for a couple of questions from Representative Meckland, I understand. Representative Meckland.
I'm here. Sorry. So going back to Eric Crone's testimony, if you wouldn't mind, there are certain applications where a pitch roof may need this, and I get that. But there's also many that would not need that, that would never be used. So my question would be this. Would it not be better for, like, plan review through the building process to determine which of these buildings actually has that kind of in-between gap where this is it needs to be there because lift equipment cannot get to it or landscape versus just make everybody put it on everything when it's not even used? I mean, I agree that we don't want people falling. I totally understand that. But if this is being required to be put on buildings that it's never going to be used, that seems like a kind of a waste of resource and time. And for those buildings that actually need it, but that I think could be determined through plan review throughout the permitting process. And perhaps the Department of Labor Commissioner could pipe in here and say we could probably clean up some of this language and get me some kind of answers to address some of these issues. I mean, I think Peter Stalin made a pretty clear case that he's had buildings where it's never been needed because it just doesn't work in that scenario. So I don't, maybe one of you can help me out and help me understand, and I'll hit mute and wait for feedback. Thank you.
Was that a question for the commissioner?
Well, if she can help see, you know, I think there's room to have this cleaned up, and there's probably wiggle room back and forth where, yes, some buildings, many buildings probably do need it, but not all do. So between the testifiers and or the commissioner, whoever wants to help me understand, like, why would we put this on every building if it's never used? This is kind of my question, and thank you, Chair.
Understandable. Yeah. Would the commissioner like to respond?
Chair Sundin, Chair Sundin, and representative, I would refer the question to my the state building official, who's a member of my staff, who has been engaged on this. So Scott McClellan.
Mr. McClellan?
Yes, Mr. Chair, committee members. This is Scott McClellan. I'm the Director of Construction Codes and Licensing and a state building official. The department is neutral on this bill, and the primary reason we are is because we have Representative Detmer's proposal, and we've heard this numerous times from many architects since this law went into effect, is that in sloped roof buildings, the kind of buildings we're talking about here, the building code requires roof access through a stairway to the roof in all buildings four or more stories in height. And the exception is with sloped roof buildings that are of at least 412 pitch. So in those instances, there is no roof access. Therefore, there's no practical way for anyone to access Anchorage to suspend themselves off of it. Somebody would have to get up there through a ladder or lift to hook onto those anchorages. So there's this gap between four and six stories where if the building has a flat roof, you must install the anchors. But if it's a pitched roof, you wouldn't need to. Now, in some of the high-rise buildings, they do put up sloped facade. But when you get to high-rise buildings, and that would be seven stories or more typically, you have to have roof access regardless. So in those instances, you would have to put anchorages in.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Who's up and next? Mr. Chair.
Representative Detmer.
And for that very reason is why I brought Department of Labor in to help put this language together, because they've been around this issue for a long time. And I felt it was important to make sure we get the language the right way, and also that would provide understanding. The whole purpose of the anchors was for the flat roofs. And so I feel that this is a good piece of legislation that's going to help a lot of people that are in the industry of construction and putting people back to work. I think this is an important piece of legislation.
Okay, thank you. Representative Fabian had a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For Mr. McClellan, I think it's really important that we get on the record that And again, I think you've already stated it, but this is a very, very narrow piece of legislation addressing a very, very narrow class of building, and that's the ones in that 4 to 6 story or 4 to 6 floors. Is that not correct?
Mr. Chair, Representative Fabian and members, yes, that is correct.
Yeah. Okay.
Yes.
So,
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This bill was introduced in early March, and I'm wondering if, and I applaud Representative Detmer for reaching out to the Department of Labor and Industry to work with them to get something that's workable by their standards. Now, Mr. McClellan, you said that the agency is neutral on this, but you did provide the language to Representative Detmer that is in his bill. Is that not correct as well?
Representative, or Ms. Yep. McClellan?
Sure. Mr. Chair, Representative Fabian and committee members, when we did meet with Representative Detmer, and he told us what his plight was, and I relayed what the concerns of the building code would be and where the building code does not require rooftop access. So through the requirements of the building code, he can interpolate that this 5 and 6 story structures that don't require roof access in a 412 pitch building, that's where he could propose legislation that would make sense. We didn't actually draft it, but we helped him understand the practicality of it in a sloped roof building where one can't get access to the roof. There's no access to it internally.
Yeah, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Fabian. We're running tight on the time. Go ahead, Representative Fabian.
So, thank you, Mr. Chair. Back to Mr. McClellan, Commissioner. What's wrong with this language that's here from your perspective, if anything?
Commissioner, nothing. Please unmute yourself. I believe you're muted.
Well,
try again.
Can you hear me now? No.
Yeah, try again. There you go.
Okay. Chair Sundin, Representative Fabian, I would again defer to Scott McClellan, who's the director of my Construction Code and Licensing Division.
Mr. McClellan?
Certainly, Mr. Comments? Chair, Representative Fabian, I did not hear the question. It didn't come through. I'm sorry.
Representative Fabian, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So my question for Mr. McClellan is if they worked with Representative Detmer on this language, and he's bringing it forward now, the agency has stated that they're neutral on this. What's then from the agency's perspective, what's wrong with this language that's in the bill that we're hearing now? And I'd also like to hear Mr. Stalin one more time and his concern. Thank you.
Certainly.
Can you respond?
Mr. Chair, Representative Fabian, committee members, the department has no concerns with the bill as proposed. It's consistent with the other requirements of the building code for rooftop access, and there's no concerns that we have.
Thank you, Mr. McClellan. Any other further comments or questions regarding 4244?
Mr. Chair, Peter Stalin, could I respond to Representative Fabian's comment?
Mr. Stalin, please do.
Yeah, I'd like just to point out one other thing, and that is that relative to this situation, if there's other unique situations that window washers are concerned about, building owners like myself are very concerned about the health, welfare, and safety of all the people that work on our buildings at all times. And when we go through the process with the building inspectors of various cities to build these buildings, as one gentleman pointed out, the plan review gives an opportunity to suggest that in this particular instance, maybe an anchor would be appropriate. And then if it were and it were reasonable, of course, somebody like myself, I certainly would approve that and build it. It was just in many situations like we're talking about, it makes zero sense. So So there's always, I don't think that the statute prohibits anybody from adding safety features to help window washers or, you know, other people that would be working on a building at any time. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. We're just about to wrap up. Any further comments, please? I would have a couple. I entered this with good discussions with Representative Detmer and interested in the bill, of course, but I heard three words during testimony, I believe it was from Melissa Heising, suspended access workers. You know, we talked about window washers, one component of the workforce that utilizes these anchors. I've used those anchors in my previous life as a construction worker on buildings and structures, and they're much appreciated. Certified welders put them in place when that's the protocol. And I just would like to hear more from other trades, other uses of the anchorages, anchorage points. I know people do siding. I don't know that they do window replacements, brick facade replacements, maintenance, that type of thing. So as well-intended as this piece of legislation is, I'm not ready to move forward on it myself, but I'll give the last word to the author.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I think we heard from testimony from the Department of Labor that the applications for this project or a building with the pitch roofs, putting these anchors in, just they wouldn't be used. So with that knowledge, I would, it's hard for me to understand why we wouldn't go forward to the next committee and have some more testimony, as you mentioned, in the next committee. I think we're helping out those that are in the construction business that want to put people back to work, that they're really concerned about safety. And but this is why we brought this bill forward, because there's certain things in construction that sometimes just doesn't make sense. And sometimes we need to take a look at the statute and make those changes to help those that are in the construction business and development business. And this is a real case. And this is something brought to me back in March, that it doesn't make sense to have these anchors on these buildings when they're not going to be used. Just that in itself is a good reason to move this bill forward so that we can have more discussions in the next committee. Thank you.
All right. On House File 4244, the motion from Detmer to refer the bill to the Jobs and Economic Development, we can take the roll.
Chair Sundin.
No.
Vice Chair Cagle.
No.
Representative Vogel.
Yes.
Representative Brand.
No.
Representative Claflin.
No.
Representative Detmer.
Yes.
Representative Eklund.
No.
Representative Fabian.
Aye.
Representative Hornstein.
No.
Representative Lippert.
No.
Representative Meckland.
Yes.
Representative Nelson Michael.
No.
Representative Nelson Nathan.
Yes.
Representative Purcell.
No.
Representative Zhang.
No.
That's 5 ayes and 10 nays.
Okay, the motion does not pass. This may very well be our last Labor Committee gathering for the year. I don't know that for certain, but I'd like to recognize a couple of the committee members that have, one has made things interesting and one has made things very pleasant. Bob Vogel, Representative Vogel, it's been a pleasure working with you. You're the gentleman of all gentlemen in the House here. It's really a pleasantry working with you. And if you want to have a couple of words, go right ahead.
I've enjoyed the committee as well. I'd like to thank everybody for the lively discussions we've had. I came into this kind of midterm as the lead, and that's an interesting position for me because I hadn't really done that before. So it's been nice to be in an environment where we can discuss and come up with mostly good ideas. So thank you, Chair, and hopefully maybe we'll have another chance to find a way to push some lawnmowers together.
Thank you very much, Representative Vogel. Now the interesting one, Representative Fabian, would you have any final parting words for the committee?
No, Mr. Chair, thank you. I appreciate your leadership. I'm disappointed in what happened today in this committee with the hearing that Representative Bentmer had. It's too bad that we can't do some common sense things more frequently. I like working with you, Mr. Chair. I hope that the lawnmower stuff can keep moving forward. And maybe some way, somehow, we can continue to work on the Bentmer bill somehow through this process, maybe through the Senate or whatever, to address some of the concerns that were expressed today. And we can actually do more, to build more things and put more people to work. Thank you.
Thank you. We are adjourned.